Radio Influence. The future is now.
Good afternoon, everyone, or evening, I guess you could say. It is Friday, August 17th, and you are listening to the Dark to Light podcast with...
Frankie Val on the plums.
Oh my gosh, and beans, I have to say. The plums thing. Can we just talk about that for a quick second before we get started?
Yes.
Okay, so on your show, you have these bumpers that you play, like, between breaks and stuff like that, that are really hysterical. And one of them is this, it's an outtake from what movie?
It's not a movie. It was the HBO show Eastbound and Down with what's his name? I'm losing his name now. But Will Ferrell, he played a supporting role throughout that whole series that was just awesome. Ashley Schaefer, he was a used car salesman, and he's just so amazing. And the outtakes of that entire thing was just, Danny McBride. So the outtakes in those are just some of the most legendary things I've ever seen.
So it's inappropriate, right?
Yes, very.
You know, you guys can equate plums to what they may equate to on a body, right? We'll just say that. And so, like, the skit in and of itself, like the outtakes, they make you die. But what my daughter is a very big, quite frankly, fan. And she...
God help.
Yeah, I know. She has a sticker. She has one of your stickers. She bought some merch, and she's got it on her desk downstairs as like a mouse pad.
This is great.
It's true. She's a huge fan of yours. She was dying to meet you in New York. Dying.
Well, we'll get that figured out. So we will get that figured out for sure.
So she's a huge fan, and she goes around reciting that now. It's an inside joke.
I can feel it in my plums. Oh, they go on and on, but it's, you know, and I use it a lot, and once you use it, forget about it. But yeah, all those breaks are very, very cathartic for me. I try to get all the, you know, there's so many movies, there's so many iconic scenes from movies and things I want to put up there, but then again, you're up against YouTube, and you're up against all these different types of modes of censorship, and you know, I want to play by the rules, but at the same time, the rules are ridiculous. So,
yeah, I gotta say, when I first started watching you, some of those things made me uncomfortable. Like, I felt uncomfortable listening to them. And then after one or two shows, you start to become part of like the family, and you get it.
Feel uncomfortable? Do you remember?
Yes, I do. It was the N-word one.
Oh, the talk shit hotline.
Yes.
Oh, that is part of internet history, and it's amazing.
Now I understand its significance, but when I first heard it, I was like, oh my gosh, this guy has plums.
Yeah, well, you know, you gotta have plums. And of course, it is a lot easier to play something like that knowing that it is written and acted out all by black people.
Yes.
Who have an amazing sense of humor. So that's just, you know, if you haven't seen the Talk Shit Hotline commercial, go ahead and check it out for yourself. I'm laughing just thinking about it.
It's really, really crazy. Anyway, but you become a part of, like, the Quite Frankly family. You really do. And you start to get the inside jokes and the characters. It's just a great show. If you guys are still missing out, please go watch it. It's really good.
I appreciate that.
Look, your viewership, I've been kind of poking my head in, you know, usually I catch it the next day, but I've been poking my head into your show, and your numbers are awesome lately.
I'm really happy with that, mainly because, you know, it's just nobody can find the show unless it's people sharing it. So I just know that no matter what is going on, I can see the market improvement, and it's all because of people are having a good time.
Yeah.
Because there'd be no other explanation for it. I'm every once in a while I get some pretty key endorsements. You've been a huge friend of mine and a friend to the show, and I thank you for that over and over again. And but aside from that, it really is just a matter of people enjoying themselves, or else it wouldn't be going the way it is. But then again, you look at Dark to Light, and wow, I mean that dwarfs anything I ever thought I'd be a part of.
Me too, to be honest.
So great.
I'm so happy everyone loves it. I think we're getting more comfortable with each other and, like, you know, things are just flowing a little better. Took us a couple. What are we on? Episode 12 now or 13?
No, we might be closer to 15.
No.
We might be closer. I don't know.
I do.
Really? Because yeah. I thought we passed 10 like 4 weeks ago.
I'm going to check while we're talking here. But it's been a great experience. I know, like, you know, we're kind of starting it off a little bit differently today. This will be episode 15. You're right.
Ha.
Damn it.
Love
episode 15. And you know, obviously, thank you to everybody listening. I got to say, before we get started, I had an awesome experience this week that I have to share with everyone. And everyone's going to think I'm crazy. But I got my Sunbasket box. Do you guys, I don't know if you remember, Sunbasket is the company, they deliver meal kits right to your door, making healthy cooking easy and convenient for any busy lifestyle. And I get the box and I put it on my counter and I'm so excited to see what's in there. Like, I was overjoyed. So I open it up and there's these bags and these paper bags and it's all sustainable and they're each with like a sticker on them. And you like open it up and there's this, I sent you pictures, Frank.
Oh, no, you've been sending me pictures all week, and I'm jealous, actually. I wanted those meatballs. What was the meatball one that you showed me?
Oh, my goodness. I would never have eaten this on my own. Like, I would never have eaten this if I had just been shopping in the store and wanted to come up with something to eat. It was these beautiful chicken-like meatballs with fresh spinach and parsley and this amazing marinara sauce and cauliflower rice. And it was just, oh my goodness, it was so good. And it was an organic chicken. They give you everything. So
let me ask you something. When they send you all this stuff, do you ever have a lot of leftovers or do they send you the perfect amount?
No, I'll be honest with you. It was the perfect amount. I'm not even just saying that, guys. Like, I'm signing up for Sunbasket. No, hands down, there was no questions about it. Honestly, it was the best experience ever. You open up the bags. And all the food's in there, like, perfectly portioned. Everything's measured. There was, like, even a little spice cup for the seasoning for the meat, for the chicken. They give you all the meat. They give you all of the vegetables. They give you everything you need. The only thing that I used out of my pantry was olive oil, salt, and pepper for that whole recipe.
If you can't handle that, then what the hell are you doing?
Right.
Oil, salt, and pepper. Got it.
Oh, my gosh. And you could pick from, like, paleo, gluten-free, lean and clean, vegan, Mediterranean. They have, like, a family option so you can cook for the family. And you can even mix and match because I was looking now, which one am I getting, right? Which one am I going to get? And you can actually mix and match. So if you wanted to do, like, a Mediterranean recipe, a paleo recipe, and a gluten-free recipe in 1 week, you could do that, and you're not stuck. It comes out to like $11 or something, like $11.99 a meal. You can't, for all organic sourced, you know, farm to table sort of food.
It's a great deal, and like I said before, the first time you told me about it, I just fell in love with the name. There's something so pleasing about Sunbasket.
Yeah.
It just sounds like a beautiful blue sky and just crisp, snappy, just fresh, good produce. I don't know. Like I said, I'm daydreaming from hundreds of miles away. All I have to do is live vicariously through your text messages. So sooner than later, I'll be signing up myself.
I'm just so excited about this. Like, legitimately, it isn't even like, I loved it. It's actually great too, because in the box there is like this, the cotton. It comes the freezing to keep the meat cold and stuff, because, like, I still have a sausage recipe to make and then a salmon salad thing to make too. I'm going to do that today. But the frozen stuff, usually they'll put, like, dry ice in other companies. They'll throw dry ice in there. It's actually organic cotton inside of this sustainable plastic coating that you can recycle. It's really amazing. So if you guys want to try out Sunbasket, you can go to sunbasket.com/darktolight today to learn more and get $35 off your first order. That's sunbasket.com/darktolight for $35 off. sunbasket.com/darktolight. It gets my stamp of approval times 1,000. Awesome, awesome, awesome company. Just saying.
Yeah, no, hey, I love all the updates, so yeah. I'm right there with you.
Yeah, I was thinking about filming a tutorial video, like, where I film myself cooking it. That's how much fun it was. Anyway.
One day.
Now that we've done this, let's go into the news because that, I mean, you know, it had to be done. Had to be done. So there's a lot going on. A lot's happened this week, Frank.
There is. There is. And it's another one of those tiring weeks where you wait. It's not, it wasn't a bad week. It was just a lot. And I just honestly can't believe we're sitting here on a Friday again, but let's just jump right into it, I guess. Where do you want to start?
Yeah. All right. Let's start on the Manafort case. Let's start there. So it closing arguments, you know, the defense didn't call any witnesses. Paul Manafort didn't testify. Basically, they closed, and then the jury went to deliberate. And the jury came back yesterday with four questions. Did you read anything about this?
Yes. I saw the one question about reasonable doubt.
Yeah, and you know, you could go either way on that, right? I mean, you could go reasonable doubt being, you know, did they prove their case beyond a reasonable doubt? Or you could go the other way with it and say there's like maybe one holdout somewhere and they're trying to prove to him that they've proven the case beyond a reasonable doubt. You don't know. The questions were interesting. They kind of lend themselves to not – like the jury may not understand some of the complex accounting stuff that's going on.
The only thing I had been able to really keep in stay on top of, and the thing that popped out the most was that question about reasonable doubt. That told me, and obviously my first inclination was to say, I wonder if there's a couple of members of the jury that are hung up on all this stuff, and they just wanted to have a little bit more clarification on this, because the whole thing here is that when you're in a jury setting. And you're watching all this go on, and you know that it is especially in this case, and I have no experience in something like this, but if you're involved in a case like this, where you know that the attention of the country is taking a look at it, and you know that the implications of it, even though the things and the charges and everything that you're deliberating at that point has nothing to do with the president, you know that it has everything to do with the president at the same time, because the way it's being spun, the way that he was actually even found, the special counsel, you know everything that's riding on it. So with all of those things in your mind as a juror, I wouldn't be surprised if there's a couple of people there sitting there trying to weigh out the reality of what's going on outside of the courtroom, in the media, and how everybody's looking at this trial, and sitting there with all the facts in front of you and saying, well, I know what some people, what certain people would like to see come from this, but do I actually have all of the pieces to say without a doubt this is exactly what happened? Or is there one piece left off? And when you start actually, it's one thing to also be on Twitter and say, oh, throw this person in jail, throw that person in jail, do away with their lives, take this livelihood away, do this. And you can cast all the judgment you want from Twitter. But when you're actually sitting there and you're part of a small group of people who actually have a person's life in their hands, you need to be absolutely 100% sure that there was no T's left uncrossed, no I's left undotted. And that's what comes to me when I hear something like that. I'm a lot more inclined to think it's the first thing that you said, not the latter.
Yeah, I'm with you on that to a degree. I don't think the government did a really good job here of proving their case, to be honest. And you know, I'm in an WAPU, that's what I should be calling them, WAPU, a WAPO article right now. And it says, jurors sometimes struggle with what constitutes a reasonable doubt of someone's guilt versus an unreasonable doubt. The judge told them, reasonable doubt is, quote, a doubt based on reason, but added, the government is not required to prove guilt beyond all possible doubt. Defense attorneys emphasized in their closing argument that it's not enough to believe a defendant is likely guilty or even highly likely guilty, using a thermometer chart to make the point. So that obviously contributed. And, you know, to be honest, though, Frank, the thing that's bothering me about this, and I shared this morning, BuzzFeed and the rest of the media filed a motion to unseal the jury's name, the jurors' names and addresses.
Why?
The Media Coalition, which consists of CNN, The AP, BuzzFeed, NBC Universal, the New- NBC. NBC's my favorite media outlet. Yeah. Politico and the Washington Post, which they are.
Go ahead. They're trying to dox the.
Yes. Yes. Who would ever want to be on a jury? Who would ever want to be on a jury again? Let's say they decide that Manafort isn't guilty. Do you know what the media is going to do to them and their families?
That's what I'm talking about. I mean, it's not even that. It's also this. It's not even just the media. It's not about what the media is going to do to them. See, the media, they play this role of, you know, the they're almost like, you know, Emperor Palpatine. Right at the end of the Last Jedi, the Revenge of the Sith, where he's pretending that he's about to die to be able to get Anakin Skywalker to kill Mace Windu. Mm. That's the media is the fawning little fake injured animal in the corner of the room that's just trying to do the right thing. They just want to get all of the information, all the pertinent information to any kind of a story.
You mean like somebody filing bankruptcy a decade ago?
Oh yeah, well and especially in this case, I mean, all you want to do is know everything you can about the trial, the jurors themselves, and all that stuff. And of course, if you can just kind of like, it's almost like one of those things where you don't have to say anything, but the jurors know that if they return a verdict based on everything that was presented to them in this trial, that is not to the liking of a certain faction of people mm-hmm. in the country, especially a faction that controls the media, then the media doesn't have to do anything to slam the jurors themselves, as long as everybody knows who's to blame for letting Paul Manafort get away.
Right. Who's to blame, how they voted in the past, what their race and religion are, how many kids they have, what county they live in, you know, all those pertinent details you need to know about a juror in a massive case, in a scandal bigger than the United States has ever seen before. It's not like they haven't gone through enough already.
Right. So they just want to let everybody know the media is just doing their due diligence. It's obviously not a scheme or a plot or anything backhanded. They just want to let everybody know who is responsible for letting Paul Manafort, Trump's buddy, off the hook if that day does come. That's all they're doing.
Well, the judge granted the media's motion to intervene. And he said he's going to try and hold a hearing this afternoon on the substance of it. So there's still, he said that he plans to release all the sealed materials, things that have been sealed for a really long time in this case at the end of the case, with one exception, but he didn't say what the exception was. So I am very interested because remember, this judge, Ellis, viewed the directive to Mueller in the skiff when he was deciding whether or not to let this case proceed. Do you remember that?
No, I don't.
Okay, so the redacted kind of directive to Mueller, I'm forgetting the exact term for it right now, but the redacted thing to Mueller to tell him what his scope was, it was redacted to the public. We couldn't read like two pages of it. And there was a big argument in court. And the judge was like, I have access to classified materials. I have all the clearances needed. I can view this document down in a skiff because Manafort's attorneys were arguing that this was not within the scope of his investigation. So Judge Ellis, the judge who's not been kind to the special counsel, basically saying to one of the attorneys last week, are you crying?
Yeah, I remember that. I've been loving Judge Ellis.
Yeah. He's,
you know, anybody who's no nonsense, no bullshit type of a person, I like that.
You remember last Friday, he stepped out, he called a recess out of nowhere for 4 hours on Friday, the day that Peter Strzok was fired?
Yes.
We still don't know why he did that. Anyway, he decided to let this case move forward. So we don't know what was in there, and I don't think that we're going to see it when all this rest of this stuff is unsealed. But I don't know. I think that hopefully the judge does the right thing here and helps these jurors to protect their identity. It's not fun to go through that. It's really not. So no. There's the Manafort case. Hopefully we get a verdict soon. I just want this to be over with in Virginia anyway. And then it's got to go to D.C. and all that other nonsense. So there's that. And then we also had this whole New Mexico thing. It's New Mexico, right? I don't want to.
Yes.
This is crazy. Okay. So they had this compound in New Mexico where there were these basically connected terrorists connected to like the DNC and some people connected to the DNC. You know, I got to pull the thread up by Rosie Almost Jingo on Twitter. She's done a fantastic job of like pulling all the details out of this. But this site was unearthed in New Mexico. They found the remains of a dead child there. These people were terrorists basically planning and teaching these kids how to shoot up schools. I mean, that in of itself we could talk about for 20 minutes.
But the thing to me here is that when you hear from this judge out there who decided to just put an ankle bracelet on these terrorists who were trying to teach kids to destroy the lives of others, whether they be other students or whether they be teachers. Either way, I love how they pretty much come to the conclusion, the judge did, that these terrorists did not pose a threat to the community, even though their lot in life was teaching other people to destroy community members, like physically destroy the lives of community members and their families with deadly weapons. I don't know how you can hold those two things in your head at the same time and call yourself a rational human being, let alone a judge.
Yeah, it's really bad. And she's, you know, there's a lot about her. She basically, what she did too, was accuse the prosecutors in this case of being anti-Muslim, like Islamophobic. Judge Backus wrote that the state of New Mexico, quote, apparently expected the court to take the individual's faith into account in determining whether or not the defendants were a danger to the community. This is what the order says. The defendants are apparently of the Muslim faith. The court was asked by the state to make a finding of dangerousness and a finding of no conditions of release could ensure the safety of the community. The state apparently expected the court to take the individual's faith into account in making such a determination. The court has never been asked to take any other person's faith into account in making a determination of dangerousness. The court's not aware of any law that allows the court to take a person's faith into consideration. And the state alleges there was a big plan afoot, but the state has not shown to my satisfaction by clear and convincing evidence what, in fact, that plan was. The state wants me to make a leap, and it's a large leap that would be to hold people in jail without bond based on, again, troubling facts, but I didn't hear any chote plan that was being alleged by the state. Mm. Now, this person here, one of the people there, was here in the country illegally for over 20 years. And I think that the most, now ISIS stepped in and held a couple of these people. Like ISIS said, okay, well, all right, judge, you want to step out of line? ICE is going to come in now and hold these folks on immigration issues, which good.
Yeah. Yeah, but if you've been in the country for 20 years, you're automatically a citizen. Don't you know that?
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's how it works now.
Oh, goodness.
All you got to do is come on over here, have a couple of kids, and just, you know, squat. Hmm. Just squat, and then you say, how dare you? We've only known this place as our home. And that's and then you're a citizen.
The worst part of all of this is I'm looking today, and there's a story. Authorities have partially bulldozed the compound. The trailer that was the main dwelling has been dragged out and seized, but ammo, bulletproof vests, and paperwork remain behind.
Mm.
Really? It's like a bomb went off in that thing now. There's evidence laying around everywhere. What in the living heck is going on here?
That entire place should have been kept completely preserved. It should be swarmed by CSI.
Yeah, there are reporters walking around here. Like, there was another case, Frank, where there were reporters walking around in like what appeared to be like an active crime scene, touching things. It was recently. It was like within the past 18 months. Shoot, I can't remember what it was. And everybody was like, why are there reporters inside of a crime scene? What the heck was that?
None of this makes any sense. None of it. It's very, very odd what's going on here when you look at how even just crime scenes are being handled. I don't know.
There was a thing. I'm going to find it. Hold on a second. Well, I just stopped us for a second to try and find it, and I can't. Somebody out there is going to know. You can email us at darktolightpodcast@protonmail.com. which is our show email address. If you can figure out what other story had a reporter inside a crime scene with, like, evidence strewn around. I'm blanking on it.
Do you remember what it was pertaining to? Like, what the subject matter was?
It was, like, either a high-profile murder or some kind of terrorist attack, and there were reporters, like, standing inside this person's house. Was it Paddock? No. Maybe it was Paddock. I don't remember. I don't think it was Paddock.
I don't know at all.
Damn,
I have no clue.
Sometimes my mind just doesn't do its due diligence for me.
You can only hold so much information in there.
It's popping out now. Oh, goodness. Anyway, so there's that. I mean, that's just abhorrent to me. I can't get over that. They bulldozed it. It's gone. Something's going on there, guys. Something's going on.
Well, you know, you go back a couple of years, and we're talking about the exposing of Islamic training camps, Islamist training camps that were, you know, little almost like communes and little places where this type of activity, even if it was just rhetorical and it was just mind grooming, were going on in every state of the union, pretty much. I know that Minnesota has been a stronghold for that kind of stuff. I have to go back and I have to dig it up again because nobody talks about it anymore. And then if you go on Drudge Report or anywhere else today, I forgot where it was, but in talking about Iran, how Iran is getting ready for jihad, supposedly, and post this picture of, you know, the White House exploding and all that. But also, there's this other article up there that I was checking out from the Free Beacon. Iranian-backed sleeper cell militants hibernating in the U.S. Positioned for attack. Said, well, I mean, there used to be a time where it wasn't even just Iranian sleeper cells we were talking about. We're talking about these things all over the place. I mean, we've had wide open borders for as long as I can remember at this point now, and a lot of really awful people that were managing refugee programs and they just have a really just a bad idea about how the world should be run, and it has to be for both half ignorance and half evil. I don't know what the hell it is. It's just got to be a mix of reasons why this has been happening, but this is something that nobody talks about anymore. That it wasn't too long ago that everybody's pointing out that, you know, there's a real serious contingent of, you know, it's almost like we're getting positioned for a Tet Offensive. Like, you look at what's going on in London right now.
Yep.
Well, you have London, British intelligence services talking about pretty much a standing army of confirmed 23,000 jihadists that are living within the civilian population. You really wonder why they're not cracking down on grooming gangs? Because there's a standing army ready to pop off if they feel like they're getting threatened. Right now, they know that everybody's afraid of them.
Yeah.
You know, what's happening over here? I don't know. That's just London, one city.
And we don't know who's here, Frank. We don't know who's here. And, you know, I'm not a fear monger by any stretch of the imagination. And I think there are good people doing their best to protect us. But for the people in the media, especially railing against President Trump for wanting to know who is inside this country and what are they doing here from nations that don't, you know, whether it's of our own doing because our foreign policy over the years has not been friendly, or it's blowback, whatever it is, they just hate us. I mean, we can get into all that another time. But there are people here who don't want this country to exist anymore. And they're here. So we need to figure out who they are. And if they're killing their own kids and burying them in compounds in New Mexico, we should figure out what the heck is going on before we bulldoze a site full of evidence.
Yeah, but you're going up against a group of people and political operatives who have passed down the idea that because we are complicit in some of the nation building and destabilization in the world that creates migrant crises, that creates refugees and all that stuff, we should also at the same time be suicidal enough to bring those people that we have displaced into our country and say, well, It's blowback. We have to own it.
Well, no, no, that's not what I meant. That's not what I meant.
Well, no, no, that's what I'm saying. That's okay. What's a lot of people – that's what is going on out there. It's a suicidal cycle of thinking where, yeah, we can take – we should and we have to take responsibility for what our CIA has done in the past, what past presidencies have done with, you know, deploying our military in really wanton kind of ways. But at the same time, the people, no matter how they vote, they don't want – nobody by and large wanted this. So why the hell on earth do we have – government officials and people in the press who are all part of the same push to make these operations happen, to take down these dictators and install friendly regimes and all that stuff. Why are we listening to them now that where they have to tell the rest of us in the civilian population that, well, it is our responsibility as Americans to take these people in because they're not going to be living in the communities that are going to be affected by this stuff when the violence comes. So at the same time, they're causing the problems, and then they're saying, how dare you refuse these refugees? Are you racist?
Yeah.
No, we're not racist, but we didn't want the war to begin with.
Yep.
No, this is the thing that kills me. Now we're sitting and we have to have we have to try to find a compassionate way to have a conversation about the real problem that's brewing inside of, you know, cities around the world, not just the U.S. or Europe. It's all over the place now.
It is. And it's a hard conversation to have, but it needs to happen. I mean, you know, you've got the lives of millions of people at stake here. It's not a joke. It's not a joke. Look what happens right in New York City. I mean, I'm sorry, you know, it's a hard topic. You don't want to be exclusive to anybody, but you need to talk about this. It's bad. It really is. I don't know. I don't even know what else to say about it at this point, Frank, honestly. If you guys hear some noise, it's because I've had this leak, okay? Not an intelligence leak, but a leak in my ceiling. And I guess it was from the bathroom. Leaked into the ceiling, big hole in my living room ceiling, dryers running for days. I haven't been able to do anything in terms of recording. So we kind of had to start a little bit late today. And as I'm sitting here with you, they've rung the doorbell and come in. So I don't know what's happening downstairs.
Did it ruin the carpet at all? Did it start dripping onto the carpet?
No, I have a wood floor.
Oh, okay.
And we caught it before it got to that point. So I'm hoping that my husband can kind of temper the noise downstairs because I was told, you know, you tell people, don't come show up between these hours, and then they just show up anyway.
Yeah, well, nobody sticks to a schedule.
For real. I mean, what the – frustrated, Frank.
Schedules are just suggestions.
Yeah, apparently. Frustrated. I did a thread yesterday, Frank, about what's going on with that baker in Colorado, the poor guy. Have you seen what they're doing to him?
This is just open hostility now in Colorado, and I hope that it works against these freaks in the state government out there, and I hope that it goes right back up to SCOTUS, because I think that by the time that if this actually gets back to the Supreme Court, if it does go that route again, by the time it gets back up to the Supreme Court, we're going to have one Brett Kavanaugh in there. And I think that the decision is going to be a little bit more specific and not as broad as before. And I think that that's what needs to be done now, because it's just one of those – it's that old scenario there. You just have a gun to somebody's head. You're telling them, bake the cake, bigot. And it's just – you're telling me – it's just awful, awful. Look,
they're calling him up, Frank, and they're asking him to bake cakes. They asked him to bake a cake of Satan licking an actual sex toy.
Wait, what?
Yes.
I only heard about a cake about, you know, somebody's successful transition from man to woman or some kind of gender.
No.
Transition. There was a satanic cake.
Yeah, they've been having people calling up over and over asking for the same sorts of things. So, like, this is the quote from the Weekly Standard. Are you ready? I'm thinking a three-tiered white cake, cheesecake frosting, and the topper should be a large figure of Satan licking a 9-inch black dildo. I would like it to be an actual working model that can be turned on before we unveil the cake. I can provide it for you if you don't have the means to procure one yourself.
Well, that's the left in one order of a cake.
It's disgusting.
That's the left in one order of a cake. It's not only just how obscene can we get and how far can we push. Now, I'm not a prude person at all. Okay,
really? Because I would have pegged you to be quite the.
No. I'm not a blushing bride at all. I'm a fan, okay. But the thing is that I keep all of my deviancy to myself, to my wife. You know, my circle of friends who get me. I only put out what I know I can get away with on the internet. You know, stuff like that. But this is the left here. They try to go to some limits that are so outside the pale, and they need to be able to get in that gross state of mind, and it has to be hostile, and it has to be confrontational, and it's just full of just pomp, and it's just full of this is just it. That's just it.
It's really sad. It led me to do a tweet saying I'm increasingly more disheartened that people can't just treat each other with even the most bare bones version of respect. Just golden rule. And to the golden rule comment, this is where Napoleon Hill came in. Somebody very wise on my Twitter feed sent me a print screen of a Napoleon Hill quote. "We reap what we sow. When you select a rule of conduct which you use to guide yourself in your transaction with others, you will be fair and just if you know that you are setting in motion a power that will run its course for good or bad in the lives of others, returning finally to help or hinder you according to its nature. It's your privilege to deal unjustly with others, but if you understand the basis for the golden rule, you must know that your unjust dealings will come home to roost. The law does not mean merely the flinging back upon you your acts of injustice and unkindness towards others. It goes much further and returns to you the results of every thought you release. Therefore, not only is it advisable to do unto others as you wish them to do unto you, but you must think of others as you wish them to think of you, to avail yourself fully of the benefits of this great universal law." Napoleon Hill.
Yeah. Well, I would also love to add to that, what you resist persists. And that is another universal law. That's why this resist movement, it made me chuckle from the beginning. It's like, you just signed your death warrant.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, if you want to go by, I mean, you know, there's all kinds of things we can talk about in that realm. But I have found that even though sometimes it takes a while, people that are not acting out of love get it back in spades.
Yes. Yeah, and that's what's going to be happening here. And there's nothing – the thing about this is that it's not going to get much better for these types of people with these types of agendas in the public relations sector. It's not going to get much better, because when you look at this instance of a baker, one guy in Colorado who is being ganged up on by people who obviously have – every opportunity in the world to be who they want, to love who they want, to be married to whomever they want, wherever they want. They can get a cake baked in 99.9% of the bakeries in the country. And what do? They see one person who doesn't bend the knee, and they coalesce around this person, and they try to destroy them. That is a hate movement. That is not a civil rights movement. That is not people looking for equality or reconciliation. That is a hawkish, awful group of people.
The left is a hate movement.
It's true. They've got nothing but hate. Seriously, when you look at Andrew Cuomo, I've grown to respect Mario Cuomo, even though I was very, very young when he was governor.
Yep.
I've learned a lot about him through, like, the Ken Burns baseball documentary and all that, about just the way that he worked, the way that his family worked, and just being an immigrant and just coming here and working, and the two sons.
Yeah, they're horrible.
The sons that he shit out. Oh.
My dad, I was young too, but I'm a lot older than you. I'm going to cry for a second. So the dad, like my dad and my mom, like they respected Cuomo back in the day, like when he was governor of New York. And, you know, he's done a lot of really good things. It's so weird how far that apple has fallen. It's the same thing with Grassley's son. Have you seen what he's been saying?
No.
It's on this Brennan tack, really.
Let's get into Brennan then. But yeah. just to tie up the whole why I went to Cuomo is because it seems that if you saw the thing that he said in front of, you know, all those, I don't know, it seemed like the only people that responded were a couple of women And he said, well, you know, we're not going to make America great again because it really was never that great.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's the platform. Look, and I'm going to bring this up on tonight's show, too. You look at all of the things that are turning around. You look at where we are in placement as far as on the world stage with North Korea and NATO and all the trade wars that they say were going to come that have been averted just by being by coming from a position of strength, and the unemployment rates here and the lowering of taxes and regulations, and I mean just everything that's coming together and all the good things that are happening, and still. They put out these polls that there's a 75% chance that the House is going to flip. And then I asked myself, 75% chance that we're going to try to undo all of this good stuff that's happening? And why? What is on the alternative side? The alternative for what's happening right now is Andrew Cuomo's platform. The entire Democrat Party has gotten around this platform of America is not a good place. How the hell is that winning? I don't believe it.
You don't remember back in during the campaign when he was saying make America great again, Clinton and the Dems were attacking him for saying, they were basically attacking him saying, how can you say that America isn't great now and it was never great before? We have to make it great again. It was a campaigning, it was a platform for them to go after him for saying again.
Yeah.
Now they're using it, I'm sorry, I have to correct myself. It was Goodlatte's son.
Goodlatte's
son. Yeah, he tweeted out, I'm deeply embarrassed that Peter Strzok's career was ruined by my father's political grandstanding. That committee hearing was a low point for Congress.
Ugh, it was a low point for the FBI. His ballerina dance in front of the entire country, Peter Strzok. It was the Congress. It was Peter Strzok and the Democrat members of Congress that made fools of themselves. Fools of themselves.
Gasping when Louis Gohmert said to him what everybody with a brain in this country was actually thinking, which is, does your wife think you're that much of a truth teller? Like, basically, and yeah. I get when he did that, an audible oh came out of my mouth. Like, I couldn't believe he said it. But
me too. I wouldn't have went there personally, just because I that's like oh wow.
Yeah, it was hardcore.
Good for him. He's got balls.
He's got plums. And then we go on from Peter Strzok being fired to John Brennan's security clearance being revoked and the collective uproar. So the other day, Sarah Sanders announces on Wednesday, I think it was, that they're revoking John Brennan's security clearance. Now, I just want everyone to keep in mind that John Brennan, outside of what he did or didn't do as a CIA director, he's been in the CIA his entire life, basically, just so that you guys know, former communist. He has a side company that's a defense contractor. Those people need security clearance to function. That company, I can guarantee you, will be defunct without Brennan having security clearance. But that's besides the point.
Good.
It's also going, they're looking at a case-by-case basis to James Clapper, James Comey, Michael Hayden, Sally Yates, Susan Rice, Andrew McCabe, Peter Strzok, Lisa Page, Bruce Ohr, and there was one other person they threw on there. But good.
Yeah.
Good. There is no reason whatsoever why these people should retain their security clearance. And you've got the, you know, the leftist crazies jumping to, it's a free speech violation. I'm sorry? What?
Where's my clearance? It's the First Amendment. I should have a security clearance too. Where's my clearance?
I mean, he can't speak now? Listen. That is the... Help me.
You don't need a security clearance to go on television or Twitter and say the shit that that Brennan and Comey and Clapper have been contributing to the national conversation. You don't need a security clearance for that. They are political operatives.
Yeah.
They're not when they go on MSNBC and NBC and CNN, they are not acting from – they're not giving us any kind of intelligence-based – commentary or anything like that. They're talking about how people should vote in November. James Comey is campaigning for the Democrat Party right now. These people are not, they don't need their clearance to do what the hell they're doing.
And because they have their clearance, it's a national security threat. Because they're out there saying all these things about Trump not being sane and Trump being horrible and Trump, Russia having something on Trump. And then people assume because they've got clearance, there's some kind of a background to that. No. But then we've got all these grandstanders Revoke my security clearance too, Mr. President. William H. McRaven, a retired Navy admiral, was the commander of the U.S. Joint Special Operations Command from 2011 to 2014. He oversaw the SEAL raid that killed Osama bin Laden. And he writes and says, few Americans have done more to protect this country than John Brennan. I said, I think you should revoke this dude's security clearance, too, because it's clear he's a horrible judge of character. God only knows. Just
take it away. He just said, Daddy, spank me. Spank him then. This guy's a masochist.
Seriously. Listen, I got to apologize to you because for some reason today I've been interrupting everything you're saying because I can't hear you.
No. It's all right. I stepped on your toes a few times too. I'm sure everybody at home is very upset with me.
And me. I feel like I'm. No. Yeah.
No. Wow. No. You remember, you are always going to be the.
Don't say it.
No. I'm naturally going to get more heat than you ever will on this show.
What do you mean?
Okay. Well, you don't remember some of the first comments that rolled in. You know, Frank, talk a little bit less. Allow Tracy to speak. So every time that you and I cross up with each other and it sounds like we stepped on each other's or one talked over the other, I said, no matter who started it, I'm going to be the one blamed. So I
feel so bad for you. You're still holding on to that.
No, it's good. I'm having a fun time.
It is a fun time. I'm throwing things now. Today is a very feisty show.
It's good. I'm having a good, like I said, it hasn't been a bad week. It's just been a full week.
Right? It has been very full. Anyway, so now Democracy Dies in Darkness has blocked me from reading the rest of this. I wouldn't pay to read the Washington Post for anybody. And they've tried to get around the archive thing, but I've got one. They're you can't read the Washington Post anymore. Anything about it. Not the news, nothing. They block you. You can't see unless you subscribe.
Yeah, no, I've been having that problem, if you can call it a problem, but sometimes I want to read the Washington Post to make fun of the Washington Post, and I can't read it.
Yeah, and I'm not going to pay for this. Yeah, sorry. I'm not
paying for the privilege to make fun of them.
Ugh. So I hope all of these, and you got to think about the timing. My brain works very weird. I just jumped right back to what we were talking about and didn't even give anyone a second to catch up. Bad news. Did you disappear?
No, I'm here.
Okay. We'll be okay. We'll be all right. I think that they should revoke the security clearances of all these people. And if you think about the timing of how this is rolling out, it's very interesting to me. We have struck fired. Now we have ore coming under fire, like hardcore, right? All like, you know, people are reporting things as though that it's new news, but we've known this stuff for months and months because, you know, independent media and new media has been talking about it for months and months. Mm-hmm. But Bruce Ohr has been a central figure to this for us for a long time. And now we're starting to get dribs and drabs of text messages and emails. And he was talking to Christopher Steele for a really long time, buddy, buddy, buddy. And he's next. Once they're done with him, the way they were done with Peter Strzok, he's gone. And then they'll strip his security clearance. And the reason why it's taken so long, in my opinion, for Bruce Ohr to be in front of Congress is because there was a gentleman, possibly, named Huber, who's been smacking him around for 6 months or so.
You know, and he is Ohr at this point the last domino standing?
The last one remaining?
Yeah, I'm... Of all of the names and all of the people in those upper echelon positions over there, is Ohr the last one remaining?
No. You know, people argue back and forth about Priestep, about whether he's a good guy or a bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's still there. And I'm sort of 50-50 split on him, but he retained a very high position, so they haven't really demoted him, which leads me to believe that he's on the good guy side. Although, reading some of the things that he's written and said in Congress, I'm like, I don't know.
Well, listen, either way, when it comes to Bruce Ohr and when it comes to his wife, Nellie, and when it comes to all of the, you know, the audibles, you know, in football you call an audible at the line. That's a game change at the line of scrimmage when you read the defense and you see, oh, you know what? the play that we just called may not work. We have to change something up real quick. But you can't go back to the huddle. You have to change the play. You call an audible. And what I've always saw with that little switcheroo over there at the DOJ and the FBI, once Admiral Rogers shut down access to the FISA search queries, I was and you see Nellie Orr switching it up, getting her ham radio license, getting on over there into working with Fusion GPS and you know, with a very convenient husband, a buddy back in the DOJ in this the division that had no oversight, according to Sally Yates. It just all looked, I mean, the coordination and the alignment of all these people and these pieces and the way that they were all working and the way that they all moved after certain, you know, honeypots were cut off from them. It just, I don't know, just the movement was very suspicious. So I was always wondering when it was going to come down to this. And it was amazing to see this be one of the last dominoes to fall. I just wonder what the next phase is now.
Well, you're right about everything. Yeah, they're systematically kind of deconstructing stuff. Before we have 6 minutes or 5 minutes left, and I know you have a meter outside that you probably have to fill right now.
Yeah.
All right. I wanted to talk about Papadopoulos for a second because I think this ties back into what's happening from a broader perspective right now. The other day I found I monitor cases on Pacer to see what's going on. There was a new filing in the Papadopoulos case. Now, Papadopoulos took a plea deal for lying to investigators. We know what Papadopoulos' deal is. There's arguments on either side whether he was used as a pawn or he knew what he was doing. We're not even going to discuss that right now. What I want to talk about real quick is his wife / handler?
Nelly?
No, Simona.
Wait, who are we talking about? Papadopoulos? Oh, yeah. Okay. I forgot. We moved away from Bruce.
Sorry about that. I wanted to get this in before the end of the show. Papadopoulos' wife, Simona. She knew Mifsud for years and years, right? When she first hit the talk show circuit way back in the day when they first charged him, she was very much anti-Trump. The truth will come out. The world will know about collusion with Russia. I did a breakdown video where I went over all the times that she went on the mainstream media and basically proclaimed that the Trump campaign was colluding with Russia. Things have changed quite a bit, haven't they?
Yes.
As we've learned more, you know, throughout this unfolding of what's been going on in the case with Strzok and, you know, the real start of Crossfire Hurricane, Crossfire FISA, all this nonsense. All of a sudden now, Papadopoulos is a victim and Simona is singing a very different tune. And it has been a stark contrast. And people hate on me and say, you know, how dare you? Papadopoulos is a victim in this whole thing. And I know that there's going to be a whole school of people who disagree with me. I'm just saying, if you take a look at her early interviews and all she said very vocally in the media, her connections and everything else, and you contrast them with what she said now, it's a very different story, and I would love to ask her what changed and when. Because how do you go from being so anti-administration to being so, oh my gosh, we were played? It doesn't square.
It doesn't.
It really doesn't. And I'm sorry, and you can't ignore that. You know, I'm not saying that I know or that I'm right. I'm just saying that when you're looking at these things, you can't ignore certain things like that. And I wasn't even able to keep that video I did on YouTube. They wouldn't let me keep it up. Doesn't happen very often to me. So I put it on BitChute instead.
Well, you see, this is why I say, when it comes down to people like Carter Page and George Papadopoulos, whether or not, you know, she's, oh my gosh, we were played. If you feel like, you know, this, we've been played and I, oh my gosh, we're in the crosshairs and this wasn't what it was supposed to be or what it was meant to be or whatever the hell it is. When it comes to people like these two and Papadopoulos in particular, for me, when you look at it, it's just like they're either, if they're a patsy or they're a plant. whether it was something where they found themselves in the wrong place at the wrong time and they something was thrown onto their shoulders and they were just flushed out like a patsy, or if they were a plant and they went in under the auspices, or they went in under the idea and under an agreement to go and fulfill a certain role as a mole inside of somebody's mm-hmm. campaign. No, let's say that it was the mole idea. Let's say that the deal went bad. Like, you know, Darth Vader on it's in Cloud City. I'm altering the deal. And all of a sudden you're like, "Well, what are you talking about? This wasn't part of the deal. Now we're exposed." Either way, patsy or plant, it disproves everything. It makes everything the authenticity of this entire plot, the entire nonsense. All of it goes away because they're just not authentic pieces of the puzzle. It's not authentic. They're the outlier here, and it makes everything look shoddy, and it is shoddy.
Yeah. Yeah, and if you add to that too, Frank, the fact that that guy in the Pentagon, I forget his name off the top of my head, that was demoted or reprimanded for questioning Stefan Halper's salary, $411,000 over 2 years, 2015, 2016. That's a little coincidental, huh? You know, there's a lot here, and it's being deconstructed, you know, piece by piece. Papadopoulos has been a figure that I've paid attention to from day one. There's a lot of inconsistencies there, and a lot of people have judged me based on my questions about the story. They're valid questions that nobody is yet to answer. Asking them doesn't show a lack of integrity. It shows that I'm, you know, inquisitive about not being told the truth about things over and over and over and over again, and having a data set in front of me that makes me think, you know, ask questions about what we're being told and what things could mean. And I'm going to continue to wonder about Papadopoulos no matter what until we get some solid answers.
Mm. Well, it sounds like those answers might be right around the corner, because a lot of the work that's been done and all the people that's been cleaned out, and it seems like we're readying to go into a new phase of all this.
We certainly are. We certainly are. This was a good one, Frank. What do you say?
I think it was great. I think we got to talk a little bit about everything, and it wasn't too heavy-handed with the details, and we got to get a little personal, and it was good. It was a good conversation.
It was good. I don't want you to get a ticket, so we're going to wrap it now. Thank you guys so much for listening to the 15th episode of the Dark to Light podcast with
Frankie Val on the plums.
And Beans. You guys can listen to us on Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, Apple iTunes, and RadioInfluence.com. Have a great weekend, guys.
Later.
This is a Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
Under a new policy, foot pursuits in risky circumstances may be discouraged. The policy is a direct result of the Stephen Clark shooting. What that means is, because officers are required to key up and say, hey, for instance, my call sign when I was out East Flex was Frank 13. Frank 13, I got one running, male black, black pants, red shirt, direction of flight east on Trinity Lane, blah, blah, blah. So now in Sacramento, if that supervisor is listening and they're saying, oh, you got one running, it's a male black, it's dark, nope, cancel, disregard, or as they say, discourage, then the officer is required, obligated, because he was given a direct order to stop the chase. Let me read between the lines here. They're not saying it's risky for the officer, because again, that's what the officer is trained to do. They're not saying it's risky for the community, because, you know, the community, the ones that called the police and said that there was a crime in progress because they want to be able to walk safe streets like Chicago. They're not saying it's risky for the community. What they're saying is, it's risky for the image of the police department, because if the officer is forced to use force, whether it be non-lethal or lethal, it's risky to have that image on the Sacramento Police Department that they're just going around beating and shooting black people. That's what this policy really says between the lines.
Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and RadioInfluence.com.